America has been in a cold civil war for at least a decade. Will the Charlie Kirk assassination transform it into a hot war? We'll look at the different possible scenarios that could play out over the next few years today on Crisis Point. Hello, I'm Eric Sandman, your host, editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I want you to smash that like button like we need to smash the leftist. Because, frankly, they're the problem, among some other problems as well. But they're the main problem, so we need to smash them. So smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, and let other people know about what we're doing here. You can subscribe to our email newsletter. Just go to crisismagazine.com, put in your email address, and we'll send you our articles, our news articles, our commentary articles, every morning, usually two a day. Also, you can follow us on social media at Crisis Mag. Again, smash that like button, just like we need to smash the leftist. Okay, so today, of course, is Tuesday, so we're doing our live podcast today. So please join us in the live chat. And at the end of the program, we'll try to address or comment on your comments, because I want some interaction here if you're around for the live chat. So the question I've noticed everybody seems to be asking in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination is, what's going to happen next? People talk about this as if it is a transformative moment for America, kind of like 9/11. I've seen a lot of people compare it to 9/11. And there's no question that the aftermath of 9/11 transformed our country. I would argue not for the better, but for the worse. I think the response to 9/11, going to war with Iraq, the Patriot Act, Department of Homeland Security, all that stuff was, on a whole, made our country worse than it was before 9/11. And so now people are asking, okay, we have this pivotal moment in American history, a peaceful debater, public figure gets shot in cold blood. We still don't know officially the motive, but I think we all know the motive was it was somebody who didn't want him to be able to speak, who disagreed with him and thought he was a fascist and all those other names they call people like us. I mean, if Charlie Kirk was a fascist, I don't even know what I am. I'm like an uber super duper fascist. I don't know. But the point is that people now want to know what's going to happen next. Like, as I said in the intro, our country has been in a cold civil war for many years now. We are not one people. We are not united with the same principles. Of course, America has always had some diversity, less in the past, of course, more in the more recent years, in its beliefs, its thoughts. I mean, that's one of the things about our country it founded upon, wasn't upon one specific religious belief, for example. But it's also true that America, for most of its history, was relatively united in some common cultural norms, cultural views, societal views. And we have not had that in a long time. I couldn't tell you, like in my lifetime, there's no question, I was born in the 70s. So in my lifetime, there's no question that unity has dissolved over that time frame. Like, it already was dissolving, obviously, in the 70s when I was born. But I would say in the 21st century, it's accelerated. And with the election, frankly, of Barack Obama, it went into high gear. And so we're clearly not a united country, one people under God or under anything for that matter. So we've had this cold civil war that has happened at the ballot box with some shenanigans at the ballot box with escalating tensions, escalating war of words. And now, of course, we've got some shootings. We have, of course, President Trump, who was shot last year. Charlie Kirk was assassinated last week. So is this assassination, is it going to make it a hot civil war, an actual civil war of violence, of militaries potentially going at each other, people with guns shooting each other, things like that? That's the question I think everybody wants to know. Now, I was thinking about this, what I think are the possible scenarios that could result from the Charlie Kirk assassination. And I came up with 9, and there might be more. I'd be the first to admit these aren't necessarily all of them. And some of these overlap. You could have parts of each one of these, but I want to go through some of these and talk about what I think is most likely to happen and what I think we should do to kind of guide it in the way we want it to go. The first possibility is that this is a tempest in the teapot, that the conservatives will basically do nothing substantial. To be honest, I think this is the most likely scenario based upon the past. I mean, conservatives have gotten riled up in the past many times, but essentially have done nothing and have allowed the leftists to continue to just take over our culture. Yes, right now, we're all feeling good about canceling people who celebrated the murder of a young father, husband and father. And that's great. Get them fired. Let the marketplace determine that and get these people fired. But it might be all that happens. In a month or two, we might still be talking about Charlie Kirk's assassination, but we might realize nothing's going to be done. Nothing is going to be done. The conservative movement, the Republican Party, whatever you want to call it, won't really do anything substantial. And I think this is a very likely scenario. Now, of course, if this happens, then the status quo we've had, which is the cold civil war, will continue. And the left, frankly, will continue to win. Because that's the other thing is, we've had a cold civil war for a couple decades, but one side is winning. One side is taking ground while the other side is losing ground. The left is taking ground and the right is losing ground. I don't see how you could think otherwise with the acceptance of gay marriage, with the even more and more acceptance of abortion on demand, even after Roe v. Wade was overturned, it became codified even stronger in many states, with obviously the transgender movement, with all organs of institutional power, such as the media, Hollywood, universities, all captured by the left. There's no question in the Civil War, one side's winning and one side's losing. And so if the conservatives do nothing, which like I said, is very possible, then I think that will just continue until the left completely dominates. I'm not saying the conservatives haven't had victories during this cold civil war. Obviously, the election of Donald Trump is one of them. And the overturning of Roe v. Wade was one of them, even though the result in some states made it worse. The other states made it better. So I think that's the first possibility is honestly, nothing really substantial changes in how we're doing things. And the reason I think it's very likely is because look at the Republican Party. They're awful. The vast majority of its members are not willing to step out, are not willing to do very much to actually make change happen. There are exceptions, but the vast majority do nothing. That's the first possibility I see. The second possibility is like the next step from that, which is basically the government, the federal government, maybe in some state governments, local governments, they institute some new laws, some new regulations. So they go after like the most extreme people. Maybe perhaps they do some things to go after and hold legally accountable. Some people say more egregious things. Like, for example, I saw the liberal podcaster Destiny. I don't know a lot about him, but I have heard of him and I've seen a couple clips of his. But he was basically saying he was calling for violence against conservatives, for more conservatives to get shot on the Piers Morgan show and also on his own podcast in the last day or two. Like perhaps the government will do some things to go after people like that legally and use the power of the state against them. That's kind of the next step where it's not that the conservative movement does nothing, but it does a few things and we cheer those victories. But really, ultimately, there's not much else changes. I think that's the second possibility. The third possibility is a more robust government response where the government really does step in and start to step on, I guess, override some civil liberties we have been used to in the past. They could do things to shut down leftist organizations, maybe go after like George Soros funded organizations, find ways to use the law to their advantage. Perhaps they get support from the Supreme Court. And perhaps there's support for this from the people. I mean, that would be a big part because if there isn't, then the left could just gain sympathy from the public if people don't support us. I do think people are ready. By the way, I'm not even saying at this point this is a good or bad thing. I'm just simply saying I do think the American people are more and more ready for some curtailing of previously held sacred civil rights, and including on free speech. We'll talk about free speech here a little bit more in a moment. Of course, we have such a broad definition of free speech these days. Free speech, the protection of free speech is that the state can't force somebody to say certain things or not allow them to say other things. Now, there's limits to it, of course. You know, the whole fire in a crowded theater type of thing. And there's other limits as well that everybody, I think, would agree on that there are limits. But the point is that I could see a third possibility is that the Trump administration in particular, and maybe some states like Florida or Texas, they start to take more aggressive stances, more aggressive action against some of these leftist organizations, maybe against the transgender community. And then the fourth possibility is an over-the-top government response. So you see how I'm increasingly going more and more radical of possible responses. First is they do nothing. Next is there's some action on the edges. Then there's a more robust, and now how about an over-the-top government response? What I'm saying here is the federal government finds a reason to shut down MSNBC, for example. Or maybe Trump declares that the Democratic Party has been shut down. I know that sounds insane to us, but of course this has happened in many countries in the past. It often is a prelude to a civil war, that political parties are shut out of the political process. And I don't think this is likely, but if another thing like the Charlie Kirk shooting happens, I could see more and more support building for, at the very least, shutting down the chambers of misinformation, to use their term, and fake news such as MSNBC, CNN, things like that. Now, to be honest, I know a lot of people right now, especially in the wake of the assassination, and I'm sure a lot of people in our audience would want something like this to happen. And I'm not saying it would necessarily be bad. We might end up in a better scenario than we are now, than we have been for the past 10 years. But I also think an over-the-top government response very well could lead to something worse. If you look at history, how revolutions happen, often and civil wars and general violence and things of that nature inside of a country, often it is because the government or the people in power, they respond to a legitimate threat, but their response ends up leading to something worse than the initial state. I think, I'll say it again. I don't think this is an extreme example, but I think it is an example. I think America's response to 9/11 made the country worse off than it was before 9/11. And so there's an example. I don't think it made it so worse off like we all of a sudden turned into a totalitarian country or anything like that. But there's no question in my mind that 9/11 was used by the powers that be to give them more power and to institute laws and ways of living that are frankly contrary to a free society and aren't something that we shouldn't really support. And so I think that's very plausible. I also think there are times when a government responds to a legitimate threat forcefully, and it does make the situation better. Because here's the thing that I want to make very clear. We can't continue the way we've been going for the past decade. It simply is not plausible. The middle will not hold. It's not going to continue like this. It can't, 30 years from now, we can't be in the exact situation as we have been for the past 10. It can't be a 40-year thing. It just won't. First of all, it's not good. But second of all, it just isn't plausible that it could happen. Because eventually people will either, the left and continuing to gain ground, will take total control and institute what they want, which is the totalitarian society in which they are control, they are big brother. Or the right will finally say enough is enough. We're not going to let this continue. We're going to finally shut down our enemies. And like I said, it could be done in a piecemeal way. It could be incremental. First, it's like, okay, do a little few things on the edges. Okay, now we need to do some more things. We need to maybe go after some of the funding organizations and find reasons to shut them down, to stop the funding of these of leftist organizations. And then finally, it might be, okay, we're just going to shut down universities. We're going to shut down TV stations. We're going to shut down the Democratic Party. That would be, of course, the most extreme response. And shutting down the Democratic Party, frankly, is fine by me. Now, I would hope there would be another party, a one-party rule in a secular government like we have now is likely not a good result. Sure, if we have a Catholic monarchy, that's one thing, but that's not the world we're living in. America's not going to become a Catholic monarchy tomorrow. I'm sorry. In a secular government, I don't really want a one-party rule. But I could see where, if the Democratic Party is shut down, another party is allowed to take its place. That's better. That's a plausible thing to do. The problem is with, again, I admit my bias, which is against too much government power. I mentioned this on my podcast, on the podcast I did yesterday with Kennedy Hall and Tim Flanders. It was on Kennedy's channel and also on the 1 Peter 5 channel. I said, you know, frankly, I'm a libertarian under a secular government and I'm a conservative under a Catholic government. And we live under a secular government. That's why I lean libertarian, because frankly, I don't trust these people to give them any power. Now, I will say my views have evolved such that I do think we're going to have some exercise of power in order to shut down the worst forces in our country. But I am very suspicious of too much government power. And let me give a great example from just today. Pam Bondi, the Attorney General of the United States of America, she went on air and she was, I mean, boy, don't let her, Trump, if you're listening to this podcast, I know you listen to it live. I'm sure you're in the live chat right now, Donald President Trump. Do not let her speak anymore in public. I mean, I think you should fire her. But even if you don't fire her, could you just not let her speak anymore? Because she's a disaster whenever she does. She says things like the Epstein files on my desk, and then 2 months later says there is no such thing. And now she says that we have to go after hate speech. Fortunately, every single conservative and libertarian I know condemned that. Because she was saying like hate speech isn't free speech. No, actually that is what free speech is. Now, again, I don't think free speech is an absolute. I don't think anybody does. And I would probably have more limited view of what free speech is than most people, most Americans. Yet, I know what hate speech is as it's used by the government. It's speech we do not like. It's speech we disagree with. A great example of this is if you criticize Israel, that's hate speech. It's anti-Semitism, therefore hate speech. If you criticize the political government of the modern state of Israel, that means automatically you're anti-Semitic, which automatically classifies it as hate speech. So we should absolutely, positively be opposed to any hate speech regulations or laws, because it always is going to, it's made for abuse. And so this is what I worry about when we talk about a more robust or even over-the-top government response to what's happening. I'm with you that there has to be some type of response. We can't just keep doing what we're doing. Yet at the same time, we've got to do it right. It's just too easy to fall into situations that are worse than the problem that we have now. So we have to be careful. Now, like I said, I don't have a problem with some restrictions on what we currently consider free speech. I think I'd rather, in most cases, it be done by the market, so to speak, like what's happening now. I also think, though, let's not forget that the government is part of the problem in the first place. Case in point, the universities. Most of these situations are these professors and these radicalizing of people. Where is it happening? It's not happening at Franciscan University of Steubenville. Well, they are radicalizing people, but for Catholicism. It's not happening at Ave Maria or Christendom or Benedictine or anything like that. It's not even happening. It's likely not happening very much at your local community college. You know what's happening? It's happening at state-funded public universities. Why on earth is the government, any government, state, federal, local, funding universities? It just shouldn't happen. And so when we talk about our knee-jerk reaction is we need the government to step in and make new laws and regulations, I would say let's first look at how the government is already fostering these terrible things and say get the government out of those things. Imagine if every state in the union pulled all of their support and funding for every public university in their state. Think about how radically that would change our culture. All of a sudden, you'd have a bunch of leftist professors out of work because they couldn't support themselves. These universities can't support themselves without aid from the government. I mean, a few will. They have big funding, you know, Harvard, something like that. But I'm talking about your average universities, you know, here in Ohio, Ohio State University, University of Cincinnati, you know, University of Ohio, places like Ohio University, I mean, and places like that. They will radically change. They're not, and also now they become, it becomes a true free market where they're competing for students. And so when they have some professor going off half-cocked and radicalizing his students into leftist ideology, and a bunch of parents, normal people, are like, I'm not sending my kids there. Well, then all of a sudden they shut down because it's not a matter of, oh, the local public university only costs $10,000 a year, whereas the Catholic university costs $40,000 a year. Now, all of a sudden, the local public university maybe costs a lot more. But actually what would happen is they start cutting a lot of professors, their services, things like that. You might not even have a gender studies major anymore. So I would just argue, and yes, this is probably my libertarian leanings coming out, but I think we're right on this. Before we jump to what should the government do in response, we should ask ourselves, what should the government stop doing first? Then, yes, we can talk about some restrictions the government could put into place. But first, let's just stop funding these people. I guarantee, I didn't look this up to confirm this, prove this, but I'm willing to bet Hollywood gets a lot of government, state government, at least grants as well. If the government would stop funding these organizations, these institutions that hate us, that would be a big issue. Another thing is, there's a direct line between the government and these cable TV news stations and these news outlets that goes through Big Pharma. Big Pharma funds these news outlets more than you can imagine. But what funds Big Pharma? Government. Because government requires the vaccines. They require all these things. They push them. And then that gives Big Pharma tons of money. Big Pharma then pays off the media not to say anything against them. Like, for example, their testing and things like that. So if Big Pharma wasn't allowed to advertise. First of all, if Big Pharma got no government support, it would start to wither away and die as well. And if they weren't supporting, if they weren't able to advertise on cable news stations and other media outlets, that would start to defund them as well. You see, there's a lot of things like that that I think we have to look to first before we say, hey, let's institute a new law to do this. Let's instead say, let's defund the ways the public is forced to support these organizations that hate us, that want to destroy us. Let's go there first. So those are like the first responses I've talked about is the response of the government. I think it's more likely just because the way we are, the government's going to lean towards doing new things instead of stopping doing old things like they should. But a fifth possibility I see is the natural decay and destruction of the Democratic Party. I don't see how they survive. I mean, we already saw in 2024, they were the party that basically supported the shooting of Donald Trump. I mean, we all know that. They're the party that supports the assassination of Charlie Kirk. Not officially. Yes, I know some of their politicians didn't, you know, disavow it because they know they have to. But it's not like the people who are cheering the death of Charlie Kirk are registered Republicans. They're radical leftists who find a home mostly in the Democratic Party. And so it's very possible that the Democratic Party will fail of natural causes, not through any government intervention, anything like that, but just simply natural causes. And another party take its place. This has happened historically in the past. It happened up to the actual Civil War, the American Civil War. So it very well could happen up to the next Civil War, where all of a sudden another party takes over. Now, I don't really see any of the current third parties, including the Libertarian Party, as a natural successor to the Democratic Party, but perhaps it would be a party that is more conservative than the Republicans. Or maybe it's a party that's not quite, not as conservative Republicans. Maybe they're more liberal, but they're not insane. They reject the more radical elements of their base, such as the transgender movement, the racist Black Lives Matter movement, things like that. I think that's possible. This is actually one of the best possibilities because this would be a peaceful transition. And I do think this is not impossible to happen, because I do think normal people, which I do believe make up most of our country, normal people normal people aren't on Reddit. Reddit does not reflect normal people. It does not reflect the majority. It reflects a too large of a segment of our society, but doesn't reflect the majority. And so what we need to do is we need to work, of course, to destroy the Democratic Party. Now, I am not a Republican. I'm not registered as a Republican. I don't consider myself a Republican. I vote often for Republicans. But at the same time, you got to know where the clear and present danger is. You got to know where the biggest threat is, and that's the Democratic Party. I just don't think anybody should vote for a Democrat. Like, I would not vote for a Democrat now out of principle, even if that Democrat said he was pro-life and was a good guy. You know, I thought he was a good guy, stuff like that, simply because he's part of a political party that is evil to its core. The Republican Party embraces certain evil things, and they're really dumb in a lot of ways, but they aren't as foundationally evil as the Democratic Party is. And so my hope is, one of my hopes and possibilities is the natural demise of the Democratic Party. A sixth possibility that could happen is violence on the streets, but not a full-scale civil war. So this would mean a continued violence that we've already seen, like against Charlie Kirk and others, but it starts to be both sides. I mean, they claim it's both sides. I'm not saying there aren't any crazies on the right, but we all know, as J.D. Vance said yesterday on the Charlie Kirk show, the vast majority is on the left. It's the radical left that is the violent organizations and the terrorist groups. But it is possible that right-wing groups will form that use violence. I would urge them not to. I think it's stupid. I'll talk about that in a minute why. But it is possible. And so what we'll see is an escalation of violence on the streets, where prominent liberals get shot at or attacked, whatever, prominent conservatives do as well. And it just kind of continues like that. And there's back and forth. This is not a good scenario in any way, shape, or form, because all this is chaos. And it inevitably seems to me it leads to an actual all-out civil war. I don't see how it doesn't lead to that. And so, but I do think that's a possibility that will continue to percolate, that violence will escalate, that eventually some conservatives will say, enough is enough, we're going to attack back. Again, I don't think they should do that. I think it's dumb to do that, and probably immoral, depending on the situation. And we'll talk about that in a second. A seventh possibility is the one that I've advocated for and is one of the most peaceful, but I also think it's probably one of the most unlikely, and that's peaceful secession. Like, for example, why couldn't we say, leftists, you get the West Coast. We'll give you California, Oregon, and Washington. Go there, do whatever you want there, and we're going to control the rest of the country. And anybody who does things like support Charlie Kirk, his death, I mean, support him being shot and all this, celebrate that, things like that, you're required to go to that new Western States of America, you know, leftist States of America, whatever you want to call it. And if you don't go willingly, you'll forcibly be deported. You'll be considered an illegal immigrant, and we'll just send you over there. Now, I know there's problems with that scenario, but it's actually more peaceful than a full-scale civil war. It could lead to a civil war, I admit, but it's possible you could do that peacefully, where basically they get an area where they can do their transgender whatever. And I do think there would be some force involved, because it wouldn't agree to this completely willingly. I do think this is one of the better possibilities, because it's one of the more peaceful possibilities. It does involve some force, but not full and unadulterated civil war. So I think that is another possibility. An eighth possibility out of my nine possibilities is a hot civil war. That is the worst case scenario in many ways. And it's unclear, though, how this would work. The reason I say that is, civil wars, actual civil wars, typically involved organize military forces against each other. Think about our Civil War, of course, but other civil wars as well, like, for example, the Spanish Civil War, whatever. You have organized militaries against each other within the same country. It's hard to imagine a scenario where that happens here, because ultimately, the left don't really control the military that well. Even it, like, what's California going to do? Say, okay, you know, we're going to take our National Guard and we're going to take our police force and fight against the United States of America. I'd be willing to bet most of those people are like, no, I'm not doing that. What are you, insane, Newsom? I'm not doing that. And the same is true in New York, or you know, I think those are two most likely places. And so I personally don't see how a hot civil war occurs that easily here, simply because it requires military force. I think it's also an awful scenario, but I will say this. I'm not saying it would never be necessary. It is necessary in some historical situations for a civil war to happen because of the fact that there's no other alternatives. I am not a pacifist. I'm very anti-war in the modern context particularly, but I'm not a pacifist. There are justified reasons to go to war, and there could come a time where there's a justified reason for the United States to go into a civil war, where people of the United States go into a civil war. I don't think we're there yet, but I'm not going to claim it's impossible. But I do think it's something we should try to avoid at all costs. It is kind of the worst case scenario. Now, the ninth possibility I want to bring up is religious revival. I feel like we shouldn't ignore this as a possibility. This has happened in history, and God does move. And we've seen that on a very small scale a little bit already, because Charlie Kirk, being a practicing Christian who put his faith first, who talked about Jesus Christ first, a lot of people have been motivated by him, by his death, to seek out Christianity, seek out going. I saw a lot of people going back to church for the first time this weekend. I saw them online saying that they were. I saw people talking about their faith. J.D. Vance, on the largest podcast in the world probably right now, yesterday, the Vice President of the United States, recited parts of the Nicene Creed and said, this is the way forward. So the old days, which aren't the old days, the old days, you could talk about your faith and religion and assume we are Christian in America. But the old days, in the sense of the last couple decades, no politician of any stature wanted to talk too much about his faith. Yeah, they all pretended to be Christian. I mean, Biden would say he's a devout Catholic, which we know is a joke. But here is the Vice President of the United States, a man who is in the front running to be the next President of the United States, basically saying the Nicene Creed, talking about Jesus Christ and who he is, that is the way forward for our country. I don't think we should discount a religious revival happening in this country. And that would basically, I mean, obviously, this is the best case scenario. I left it for last because the best for last. This is our best case scenario. And I don't think we should discount it. If we're fasting and praying for our country, why would we think it's not possible we could have a religious revival? That's what we're fasting and praying for, isn't it? Now, how the state is involved in that could differ. I mean, there's different possibilities under that. But where people voluntarily give their lives to Jesus Christ, particularly enter into the Catholic Church, that solves every problem just about under the sun. Because now you're not wanting to shoot Charlie Kirk for speaking out his mind if you've had a conversion. So this is the scenario we should pray for and fast for. But we know God does not always answer our prayers in that way. He doesn't solve our problems for us. Sometimes he makes us work them out ourselves. And so it might be a very long and hard slog to do that. So those are my different possibilities. But I also want to say what specifically can be done. What should we do? I talked about this in my last podcast, the Catholic response. But I just mean, I was talking more there about our personal responses. But I mean more now, like, what do I think the government should be doing, and what should the institutions be doing? The first thing I want to say is, individually, we should all strive for peace. We should not glorify violence in any manner. I'm not saying violence isn't sometimes justified. It is. At the same time, the as Kennedy called them on our podcast yesterday, he's calling the Rambos out there who think that, oh, they're kind of itching for a fight. I'm talking about the conservative right-wing types who maybe they live out in Texas on a farm, they have their guns, things like that. And they're like, oh, they're itching. They want to bring about a civil war. They want to bring about. You're idiots. I would just say you're idiots because you don't want it. You think you want it sitting in your house, watching your action movies, you know, cleaning your gun, shooting at the range, things like that. You don't want it in real life. You don't want to be under fire. You don't want to have situations in which your house and your family is under attack by forces that are opposed to you. They might be stronger than you. You don't want your friends and family members in your community to be targeted. You don't want going to mass to be a situation in which you could get shot for going to mass. You don't want these things. If they happen, we accept them and we do our best to respond to them, but we don't desire them in any way, shape, or form. That's insanity. But at the same time, it might come a point where violence happens. I mean, a couple of people I've talked to have mentioned, like, you know, well, violence isn't justified in response to this. And I would agree with them on that, but I would ask the question, and I'll leave it out there without an answer, at what point is violence justified? At what point is violence justified? Now, I'm hoping somebody's going to clip this and make me look like, you know, a guy calling for a civil war. I'm not actually hoping that. I wouldn't surprise if somebody does do that. I'm just simply asking the question. History has shown that violence is sometimes the only response. That's why we have a just war theory. It's not to say you can't go to war. It's to say that sometimes war is necessary and violence is a reasonable response. If your family is being attacked and being shot at, you are justified in using violence to stop the attacker. And so if our whole society, everything we hold dear, is under attack, we are justified potentially in certain circumstances to use violence. Now, here's the thing, though. Here's the key point that I think a lot of people miss, people on our side. It really doesn't work unless it has some type of state power behind it. Getting your little militia group that you practice in the woods, a bunch of overweight beer drinking people with their you know, American flag t-shirts, you know, practicing their war games, that ain't going to do anything except for harm the cause. When you go out and say, we're the militia, we're going to defend this, we're going to whatever, fight off the leftists, all you're doing is harming the cause, and you'll probably get yourselves killed. It has to be some type of organized state institution. After all, our Lord has given the state a certain monopoly over violence, not a full monopoly. Like I said, there are justified reasons. You can defend yourself, things like that. But they're the ones who have to be who uses force. It can't just be some guy going off half-cocked saying, I'm going to take care of this. All you're going to do is get yourself killed, probably kill innocent people in accident, and harm the cause, harm your cause. That's what's going to really happen. But the state does have the ability at times to use force. And actually, we've already seen it start. When Donald Trump called in the National Guard to Washington, D.C. last month, to basically crack down on all the violence, that was an example of the state using force, using violence, or at least the threat of violence, to stop the chaos. And so perhaps Trump at one point will have to call in the National Guard at universities or, you know, other places around the country. There are dangers to that, of course. We could end up in a totalitarian, you know, situation. We always, you know, talk about that as a possibility. But ultimately, if the only other option is complete loss of our country, complete loss of our culture, and complete chaos, and overrun by the radical leftists who deny reality, it might be the only answer. So if we're asking the question, is there ever a point where violence is justified? I would say when we've reached that point, and I don't really think we have yet, it still has to be done the right way. It's not me going out with my bandana on and like playing, I'm thinking Eye of the Tiger from Rocky, but the Rambo music, whatever, and thinking I'm like a hero. It involves an organized and people-supported state taking care of these situations. That's how it has to happen. So that's why I think, and I'll kind of wrap it up here and go to the live chat here in a second, we need to pray for our leaders, that they are wise. Things could get worse in the response than what's happened in the last 10 years. If we do nothing, though, things will continue to get worse. We know that. So we need to pray for them. We also, frankly, we need to pray that the Democratic Party just goes under. That it, I mean, I would like it to be where it goes under because of of just the people reject them. I think that's the ideal situation. But ultimately, the Democratic Party has to get shut down one way or the other. We also have to kick out these stupid Republicans that are so bad that they cave on everything. That if the Republican right now is talking about we need unity, you need to elect him out of office next time. You need to primary him. Because now is not the time for unity. Now is the time to defeat our enemies. Peaceably, through the democratic process if possible, but we have to defeat them. We're not. So that's why I love the fact Trump's not calling for unity. Vance is not calling for unity. Erica Kirk is not calling for unity. Because you don't unite with evil. If you have a Republican, like your congressman or senator, who's talking about unity right now, they are basically Democrats. They are basically submitting to the radical left. So don't listen to them. Okay, let me go to the chat real quick. Anthony, how's it going, Anthony Abate? I should have you on sometime just to spice things up again to make it more controversial. Anthony says, I'm not sure people really understand how quickly things can spiral into violence when the political climate is the way it is right now. Yeah, I mean, read a book, people. I mean, Anthony's a construction worker. He's probably read more books than the rest of you people. No, I'm just kidding. I have a well-read audience. But seriously, things spiral quickly. Things can spiral very quickly where all of a sudden, I mean, they've already spiraled. We started the violence, obviously. But it can get really bad really quickly. That's why we really need to pray and fast. Anthony's completely right here. And I know, you know, times are crazy when I am saying Anthony's right and he's the reasonable voice around here. So that tells you something. Juan Cristobal Rojas says, J.D. Vance has said that they will go after the left and is not calling for unity. I will give him a chance. Yes, I just posted this on X yesterday. J.D. Vance is the greatest vice president of my lifetime, and he's so far ahead that he's lapped the field. Of course, I have criticism of J.D. Vance. Everybody wants to be like, you're 100% for somebody or 100% against somebody. No, I am like 90%, which is very high for me, behind J.D. Vance. He has been awesome. I did not hear, of course, his whole radio show yesterday on his whole podcast on Charlie Kirk's show, but I heard snippets of it and it was excellent. And I was very glad he called for no unity. Jake says, Charlie Kirk died for free speech. I hope not. I hope not. I'll just say it. Free speech is not absolute. Free speech is not the defining divine right that some Americans think it is. Charlie Kirk died because he was saying truthful things about Jesus, about the reality of dignity of human life in the womb, about the reality of men and women, how they are created by God. That's what he died. That's why he was shot. If he was just a free speech advocate who went around talking about free speech, he would not have gotten shot. He got shot because he talked against the radical left's lies. That's why he got shot. And I don't think free speech is not our ultimate good here. I do think free speech under a secular government is a very good thing, and it should be rather broad. Don't get me wrong. I think we should have a broad free speech under a secular government like we have today, but it's not the ultimate good. Daniel Verney says, the hierarchy of the Catholic Church has not been good shepherds in many years. The Catholic laity, particularly men, must step out and actively work against all leftist causes with precision. Yeah, Daniel, you're absolutely right. This is something I should do a whole podcast on this, frankly, the idea of how Catholic leaders, especially our bishops, have failed us and are honestly part of the problem. I am not saying that Catholic bishops have done things that led to the assassination of Charlie Kirk. What I am saying, though, is they have done nothing to stop it. They have not spoken out forcibly. Think about how the freak out show of the USCCB after George Floyd was killed. They just went crazy. They had all these statements, how every bishop wanted to be seen as kneeling with their masks on and, you know, blah, blah, blah. What have we heard in response to Charlie Kirk? Crickets. Bishop Strickland, of course, spoke out, but he's been kicked out of the practicing episcopate, so to speak. A few other bishops have said a few things, but in general, they have said nothing. They have done nothing. And the fact is, they still believe that we can be united with evil, something our Lord Jesus Christ himself condemned. They believe that we can be united with evil. They have been effeminate men, and they are part of the problem. They are the useful idiots of the radical left. They're not part of the radical left. I mean, there's a few of them that are crazy. Most of them are just weak. They're not evil as much as they are weak, but that's how evil grows. in any situation, like, for example, the Russian Revolution, it's not like all of a sudden the majority of the Russians decide, hey, we want a communist government. We want this revolution. No, a very small percentage wanted it, but too many people were weak and allowed it to happen. And that's what the Catholic bishops have been doing far too much. Okay. Eggy Spammy, nice name. We already live in a uniparty. Yes, I know. I am, like I said, I'm not Republican. I have talked against the uniparty as well. I know the Republican Party in general is not that far off from the Democratic Party. I am far more extreme than the Republican Party. That being said, we do have to recognize where does the greater enemy lie? And he lies within the Democratic Party. And that's why it has to be eliminated. Aaron says, the problem with California, New York, Illinois in a civil war is that they have the money and wouldn't hesitate to bring foreigners into a fight, middle Americans. I just don't know. I just don't know. Here's the thing. The left, they consist of like terrorists. They consist of some evil people. But if you're betting on a fight between a bunch of right-wing people and a bunch of left-wing people, what do you see? I mean, look, these Antifa people, usually they go out there in their mask and they start causing problems. As soon as they're challenged, they're like a bunch of girly men who start whining if they even get, you know, barely touched. I just don't see it necessarily, the left being organized a military operation against the United States. That's why I personally don't think a hot civil war is going to happen. I think some very bad things that are like a civil war could happen, but I don't see it. Maybe I'm being naive. Maybe, you know, maybe they would be able to do that. I just don't see it right now, at least. Okay, that's it for the live chat. I appreciate everybody commenting. And everybody, like I said, please pray for our leaders. Please pray that the response we give to the Charlie Kirk assassination does not make things worse, but actually does make things better and shuts down the radical left and the problem that they are for our country. Okay, everybody, until next time, God love you.